You are listening to Jaya Ashmore. You can find hundreds of meditations and talks on my websites, jayaashmore.org, jayaashmore.org, as well as opendharma.org, opendharma.org. All the recordings are offered in the tradition of generosity or dana, and your gifts are welcome. Thank you for listening. Would anyone like to ask or share anything?
To know when I've been laying and meditating, there's long periods where I don't feel like I'm there at all. Like I just drift off and I'm not sleeping, and I just want to know if that is expected and if that is in fact like part of the goal or something.
Mm-hmm. Okay, could you hear? Goal is an interesting word that maybe we'll come back to. So the drifting off is expected. snoring also can happen. So a whole range of, from not sure where I was to I was definitely asleep to whoa, what a weird dream, to I don't know where I was, to very awake, to like there's a lot of different layers of consciousness that happen. And the drifting off, I guess we could say, we could call it a necessary step rather than a goal for most of us. So we've tried really hard, most of us, at different things. We've tried really hard to find something, to be happy, to be safe, to be okay, to be included, to be finished. And I would like for this willingness of ours to give what we can towards finding out what is our potential. I would like for it to be fruitful. And I think that there are some dangers in thinking that we should be able to understand the entire process. That it should be under scientific research so that we have measurements of everything that happens. Because it's tempting to find that there are some results that we can measure, that we can feel good about, that we can feel like this is a good investment of my time. And it just could take a few decades, which we don't have that many decades to go with here. It could take a few decades before we really realize and admit that when I'm trying to get something out of whatever I'm doing, it's not fulfilling. So there is mindfulness now in many places that it wasn't last year and the year before and the year before. And there are the studies of the measured results. And so we can also make experiments here of mindfulness just means being with what's happening. So if I can feel my butt on the cushion and I can feel my shirt on my elbow and I can notice that I feel what I feel. And it can be delicious when we let mindfulness happen. And the experiment I would suggest is, yes, let's play with mindfulness, letting mindfulness happen. And let's notice when we're letting mindfulness happen and it feels delicious, and when we're trying to get something out of mindfulness, what is it? What happens? Which is more or less the same thing as just having an idea about mindfulness and going with the idea of mindfulness. Just the temptation to think that somehow, somewhere, we're going to be able to be in control and make it be how we want it to be. And it isn't. I'm sorry. So one thing that's kind of cool about that is you might have noticed that you've tried different things. You tried something and it worked for a few days. And that was exciting, and then it didn't work anymore. And that's not because you forgot how to do it right. It's just an invitation to let a deeper way unfold than me trying to tinker around with something. The spiritual practice and path is actually not about me. As much as we want it to be about me, it sounds like really promising. It's going to be this really great story about me. I'm going to save all beings. So if we could notice sooner, just from our own experience, to take the evidence in, that there's a tendency towards the mental, an idea of mindfulness and doing mindfulness mentally. So an example of that is there's a breath. And as much as I'm in contact and receiving the actual experience that we call the breath, it's amazing. It's mind-blowing. There's no end to it. And as much as I'm not really willing to be blown apart like that by just a breath, I kind of might be feeling insulted, you know. I'm supposed to be surfing the breath, not like blown away by just a breath. as much as I can notice that it's not really the breath, it's me thinking the breath, my version of the breath, my expectation of the breath. And then it's not lovely, and it's not transformative. But we can easily feel the difference if we want to. And still, how do we want to? That's really the tricky part. And so it might be about, maybe if I can use a really lame metaphor of like an elevator, if we can kind of find some way into another level where actually I don't want to be blown away by just one breath. But something does want to be with whatever it is. There's an innocence and a freshness and a readiness, and it's too quick. It's already in. It's with what is. And what is freeing. So we have the nature of things and a natural capacity somewhere. And even though I'm not willing, something is. Because I'm made of the same thing as everything else. So the reason that I find it really worthwhile to give the chance for there to be drifting away and spacing out in the meditation hall, include also sleeping, dreams. Some of my most important spiritual experiences were in dreams, in meditation. And also some were in what, I don't know if it was sleep or what it was, but I certainly was, let's say, definitely drifted somewhere. So do you get the feeling, like, please drift away, dear me. Let the dear me drift away. And it's not to say that's the end, that's not deep meditation yet, but it can really help that then some other layers. The same situation, but some other layers start to have a chance to be felt, to move us. Is that enough for now to go on? Is there any other question or something to share or comment? Yes,
Mike. It's on the same line.
Yeah.
This morning.
It's on the same line.
I realized this morning when we were talking how much a conditioning about not falling asleep in meditation. I've been taught if I'm getting sleepy, even to stand up and open the eyes, and I've been given all these advices to avoid falling asleep. And I realized that I had already a plan that obviously the first days I was going to be sleeping because I need a lot of rest. Mm. Like the body just really needs a lot of rest and the mind needs a lot of rest. Mm. But that then, after, I don't know, maybe a couple of days or 3 days, I was going to be able to be awake for meditation. Mm-hmm. So what you just said now is very helpful, but I don't know if there is, I can notice there is still this battle inside, so do you want to expose it?
Yeah.
So I could...
Yeah, great. It does often happen that after a couple of days we're rested. But there's no, as you realize, there's no way to know how much rest is needed. And in a way, as we get rested from our kind of bad way of living, or from just a difficult time. It's not always by through bad habits that we get tired. Sometimes it just happens that way, that we don't get rest. And so when we get a bit rested from that, and we can, there's more energy gathering into our, let's say, transformation. Not that we want to start measuring, but it could almost be a good sign if we get tired again. Instead of thinking like, oh, now I'm done with that bad, wrong, resting thing. Now I'm on the carpet of meditation. Now that I'm not tired anymore. Now that I'm not needing to rest or sleep. I'm here, I'm okay. But it's built into the process that things that need to happen, that we really do want to happen, that's part of why we're here, will require some more resting. Again, different kind, maybe. So that can be the resting about that's about learning. Which, I mean, I do love all the studies that people do. So, like, I love this. There's one where people were taught a piano sequence or whatever. And then the ones who would go and rest after learning it and then come back knew it. They learned it in their sleep. In their sleep, it got digested. And they can. The people who didn't rest didn't have that integrated. So there can be resting that's about integration, learning. And there can be resting that's about just so much got released that the body has to also flush. And then there can be resting where we don't know what's going on. We're entering a new level of consciousness, so to speak. And it seems to me that I'm not here. Seems to me that nothing's happening or I'm lost or whatever. And only gradually it starts to dawn that it's a clarity, simplicity and honesty, contact. So it's hard to take, and it's also, I mean, the advice that you've been given is what the advice that people give. So when you're not on this retreat, that's the advice you're going to get. Whatever you do, don't sleep in the meditation. You can sit up and have, you know, whatever, all kinds of fake mindfulness going on, but just don't sleep. So just the wide range of the chance to actually experience all of that, that we actually can experience. Sleep, not awake, dream, so-called awake, but is it awake when the mind is just on a program? Is it awake? Actually, like, then what actually is awake? It's okay for now.
I'm curious about in letting yourself drift wherever, if you're also holding some sort of intention for presence in the drifting, or if you're really letting go.
Okay. So I'd say mostly, not always, but mostly there can be a healthy intention to presence. And sometimes there can be a healthy let go of everything. And periodically, there'll be the chance for, what is that intention actually? Where did it come from? How mental is it? How much is it rooted in the past? And how much is it organically emerging from life rather than my agenda? When it's my agenda, and still sometimes it could be better than nothing, if there's really strong habit energy as well, it's my intention, but I just want to, I cannot deal with thinking this anymore. Stop. Belly. Hand on the belly. Huge breath. Whatever. Because I am done with that thinking. And yeah, this is my agenda. It could be helpful. And then we can feel when that's really so heavy-handed and not needed anymore. Some, we could still call it an intention, maybe, that's more loose or more has more energy, but therefore it's a bit lighter. And just gradually less and less mental. So one way that I like to describe it is, if you're sitting or lying or standing, and you're quiet, you're pretty quiet, and there's some spacing out, but you're pretty quiet, and there can be a feeling, it's maybe easier to access if you're lying down, but rather than me, like, whoop, getting myself back to my belly from up here, a feeling of as if the lower belly itself is part of the ocean floor, let's say, and just kind of gathers into a small hill of sand. So the least attention I can try to, you know, I'm trying to not attract the attention of my agenda or personality or my thoughts about, but still kind of a letting something gather in the lower belly. And this might be more thinking or less thinking, more spaced out, more fast or slow or quiet. But even that, at some point, is questionable. But hopefully, we can let ourselves feel that it's just like, yeah, so what? At a certain point, it's no longer serving, and we'll feel this, yeah, so what? The dog can roll over back and forth, so what? Really. So if we cannot be for and against in our usual way, so the practice, let's say, of gathering in the belly with less and less of a sort of mental attention and more of a sense, let's say, of presence that doesn't bother the head, can be really wholesome, really helpful. And then it's done in that moment and could naturally kind of fall apart and leave room for the next thing that would be more subtle, more kind, more vast, whatever. Usually those three things. And also, even way before there can be any feeling of sort of gathering in the belly without involving the thinking mind, all those efforts, sincere efforts, can be wholesome, can be helpful, can start to build a momentum towards freedom. And then when it's time for that, let's say, method, so to speak, or that layer to fall apart, to enjoy that transformation of the practice. For my son's school, I had to do some kind of activity with his third grade class. And there's a WhatsApp group for the class, and the teacher sends pictures of things, including all the activities that the different parents had done. And so I saw that also my son would bring home things that they'd done in that class activity, and it was mostly people must have Googled, like, class activity third grade, cheap materials or something. And, you know, God, there's so many little things that are sitting around waiting for my son to be ready to throw away so much unnecessary plastic and styrofoam. And and I just felt like, I just can't bring more plastic into the world if I don't have to. And with some communication with the teacher, I found that it's not required to do an arts and crafts thing. You can do anything. And so I did what's called a cosmic walk. Cosmic walk. Which is from Deep Ecology. Ruth Rosenbeck and John Seed adapted it from people before that. And it basically tells our current scientific version of the history of the universe. And there's a spiral, and on the spiral marking the major sort of chosen events, so that basically you can see that human beings almost didn't even make it onto that rope. We come so late in the history of our universe. And I did bring up the bigger questions, like, so there's this Big Bang thing that's supposed to be the beginning of the story, but as Wendell Berry says, what banged? And before it banged, where was it? And the story has its amazing beauty. And one of the things I noticed, I was gathering information from all these different places and trying to knead it into a clean timeline that I could express to third graders especially, but even to myself. Like, when was this thing called Snowball Earth, when the Earth was just a ball of snow? I mean, not through and through, but all around, everywhere, including the equator, there was snow, apparently. And kind of like, some people say it's here on the timeline, some people say here, and then, oh, there it happened twice, whoa. But the thing that most stood out for me, that still stands out for me, it almost brings some kind of weird feeling inside. Not uneasy, but almost like a kind of ugh feeling. I didn't know that it happened many, many, many times, that there were mass extinctions. And you might have heard about the dinosaurs one, right? That they're still not quite sure, but probably the meteor hit the Yucatan Peninsula, and then probably there was global warming or freezing or whatever, and we think all the dinosaurs probably died out. Maybe some of them survived as those, like, dragons stories, but... So that wasn't even the worst mass extinction. There were mass extinctions over and over and over and over again. So that was already kind of mind-blowing, but what really kind of wiggles inside me somehow is that also time and time again, okay, there's the story of how after the mass extinction that all those dinosaurs dying out left room for the mammals. And then it was the age of the mammals that took over. Instead of just being small, nocturnal, basically kind of rodents, they got to be giraffes and so on. But actually, just before, it looks like, just before the mass extinction, something new started happening, like seeds. So it's... Isn't that cool to think that there was long, like billions, millions of years, there were not seeds. And then there were seeds. And then luckily, because right after there were seeds, it was so, so hot and so, so cold that probably a lot of that plant life would have just disappeared forever, except there were seeds that made it through. It's like all these little Noah's Ark sequences that happened. Time and time again. So just before some kind of mass extinction of life in the water, life had just gotten onto land. Just. And then like 90-something percent of all species in the water died out forever, with just a few making it through. But there was these like fungi on the land, you know. And in the cosmic walk, you come to the very end, which is now, which is you, which is us. And in the way that they do it for deep ecology, they said, this is your story, this is our story. And I really love the feeling of this kind of, just before the extinction, something, an innovation happens somehow. That happens, maybe many innovations happened and only one survived. I don't want to make it sound really magical, but time and time again, at least one innovation happened that made it through the mass extinction that also happened. And then a flourishing. Trees. So in our practice also, the intention can get extinguished. That old way of having an intention can get extinguished. And we can just feel that thing that's just barely come into existence, that we can just barely feel it. We've just learned how to feel it. We really feel quite shaky with it. But it gets through and flourishes and then dies out in something else. Goes through to the next flourishing, maybe. And so we could talk about the specific kind of intention, like, may I be calm. And we could feel like, where did that come from? Maybe there was an experience of like, wow, calm. And I like that. That would be good. And we might even find different ways where there's more calm in different situations that we never even imagined we could be calm in. And it's cool. But where the reality would then, like, that would start to fall away and something fresh would start to happen. Out of that calm, that was enough for the next thing to then come about. But in our imagination about calm and how calm we're going to be, because look how calm I am now compared to then. This is really cool. And I come into my story, which is my imagination, which is false. I'm going to be always calm. It's going to go from here to 100% calm. It becomes a product that we consume, that we're loyal to. And that we, then it gives me meaning. It gives me value. It makes me feel like a valuable person. But then, wait a second. What is it that makes, it's me thinking I'm so calm that makes me feel like a valuable person. And we can just kind of untie that knot and have a rope instead of a knot. It's me who thinks I've got to prove my value. that even raises the subject of it. Through, because of wounds, of course we do, it feels like it got called into question. Do I have any value here? Did anybody even notice that I'm here, that that hurt, you know, etc. But still, then I take that as an inner habit that I have to prove my value, I have to reassure myself about my value. And that's when it's never fulfilling. And if we untie the knot, then we can almost do anything and it's fulfilling. Then at least whatever comes our way, there's fulfillment with us, near. So I'd like to ask you to kind of get it straight with yourself, what you're doing here, like what's dear to you. What's your calling? Like what is this about for you? And yeah, it's what do you think and feel about that? So there's thinking there. And I'd also like to talk about freedom, which might be, for some of us, one word for what we're doing here. And probably freedom sounds good. I guess it sounds good. But we need to find a kind of, I think we need to work to make honesty available. And the work is partly to let go of the questions about whether you have value or not. Partly, or mostly, by falling into the preciousness of life. Both as what seems to be outside you, beautiful light on the tree, and what also seems to be in you. Just as you are, not saying you don't make mistakes. You do. And if we can notice that we get confused about what freedom is. And time and again, we pretend that freedom is about getting my way. And especially if you're like, no, I don't do that. I kind of guarantee that you do. So just to kind of find how to get it straight with yourself. Just to get it straight. There is a natural capacity for freedom already in you. And there also is a human tendency towards control, towards wanting it to be your way, wanting it to be convenient, actually. Towards wanting everyone to be how you want them to be. And they are not. And in that pretend freedom, part of getting it straight is noticing that we don't really want that. You don't actually want everyone to be like you. That would be so awful. And I bet you also don't actually want control. But check it out. If you do or you don't, so whatever, it's up to you. I bet you don't. And I think one of the places we need to kind of open this big book of life, just like open to the page on what is going on in our tendency to try to control. Why? We're not in control, ever, of almost anything. So yesterday I talked about awe. Awe. And I wonder, but I'm not going to put you on the spot, if anyone experimented with awe since yesterday evening. And I just mentioned that there's a couple of flavors of awe, and one is a bit more like the sort of fear of God version, like just the feeling small, and that is big. And I'm not sure how this is going to go, but we're aware of our smallness. And then awe, where our participation in what's big is, it doesn't even come up as a question. And our smallness also is completely obvious to us, and not as a problem, but as wonderful. How wonderful to be small and in this. And I'm just curious about the difference, and there might be many reasons for the difference between a kind of more shut down experience of the vastness, the bigness of life, or of what is, of the powers at play and everything. But I think that a lot of it is where, again, whether you're connected to a religious tradition or not, whether it's just more in your psyche, I think we have sort of installed in us, adding on to experience of the bigness and the power of what is. A kind of human added sense of punishment and reward. And so if it's in the face of all that lack of control and all that power moving around and death close at hand and so on, and birth also being bizarre, something bad happening, something that hurts or that we don't like, would be taken as punishment, and what we do like would be taken as reward. In a really unconscious place, there's one of the ways that we put ourselves into a box is this fear of punishment, hope for reward, kind of initial programming. And on top of that, we layer other programs. And so yesterday when I said, like, what about taking away the embarrassment element? Everything else stays on the table, the table stays. Things happen that seem terrible, or we can say are terrible even. Things happen that seem wonderful or are wonderful. The way that affects us is a little bit in our hands. So part of the fruits of practice is how that affects you, the terrible and the wonderful. I also think that further, like, because it's so awful to live in this sort of line of punishment and reward, so like when the meditation seems to go well, it's some kind of reward instead of like, whoa, what a cool gift. I don't know how that happened. But that was so good. I think that a byproduct of living in this sort of insane way, unhealthy way, where things are taken as punishment and reward, is that we end up putting way too much energy into trying for convenience. And so that might be about getting your trip plan just right. It might be about getting just the right room. It might be just getting just the right mind state. Just the right reaction from someone. And if we could just notice sooner rather than after a few decades. Maybe especially in those moments where you finally got it all lined up. You got the room. And it's got enough room there for your yoga and enough room for, you've got a plug where you can charge your phone. Like all those things are all, it's all lined up. All the things that were annoying in all those other rooms. This room is all lined up. And just feel, yeah, that's good, and so what? Just feel the so what. It's not that we can just throw away, we can't just disregard that we need some kind of room and some way of doing the yoga, some food. But it's almost like to pass the time in this kind of small life that's about punishment and reward, I'm going to have these small concerns eat up most of my energy. Not that we think that, but we do that. This is what I see us doing. And when we realize that practice is possible and a spiritual path or living a life is possible outside of that smallness, it is possible. It asks, for the fulfillment of that, it asks you everything. So even though it's about ease and unwinding, it asks for everything that you have. And so at a certain point, we start to find a way to not go to the extreme of say, oh, I don't need a room, or I don't need any food. You do. And that can be part of the day. It can happen. But it so easily can take up the majority of the energy, and another day has gone by. And it can be when we hear that statement, it asks everything, that something in us gets really alert and is like, okay, what do we do? Tell me. And like, let's run and do it. Let's scramble. Which is okay. And it's okay, and it requires a reversal of that energy that wants to go out and arrange that. Let that same energy of willingness to do whatever it takes, whatever's possible, turn around. Be interested in what I'm not making up. What is it that I'm not making up? And so there's a knee. And as I experience this thing called knee, at the same time, there's what I'm making up about the knee. And there's some receiving of something called knee that I'm not making up. And there's something in me that's willing, and it's kind of like a lying down. A lying down with what I'm not making up. Lying down into what I'm not making up. And so that lying down is another name for everything, giving everything. With some kind of trust that there's going to be some sort of major lettings go in your lifetime. There already have been, there will be again. And it can be that just in time, something that you hardly noticed or didn't even notice, those little mammals that are just scurrying around in the dark, because they're the only warm-blooded things on the planet, so that's when they're safer from all those cold-blooded dinosaurs. Something that's like scurrying around in the dark that we didn't even notice can carry you through. Letting go of everything, letting everything give itself to what is not being made up, what is not extra, what is not forced. And there can come moments, I even hope for you that there comes a moment, maybe more than once, that you can kind of be sort of like in the mood to bargain with yourself. Yeah, but how do I know I'm going to get through this time, this major extinction event? How do you know it's safe? To be that loose? How do you know it's fruitful to be that loose? Practicing the feeling in the body, the difference between when you're using force, trying to make it right, or just caught up in habit energy, and when you're opening, when you're exposing to what is. And there's not aggression. There might be fear, and there's also courage. And trust. Doesn't it interest you if you have to choose? Between using force and not using force. Between being aggressive and not being aggressive. If you have to choose, even at the risk of your life, Doesn't it even make sense to go with being in touch with what is without aggression? Isn't that the risk you want to take? Isn't that the joke you want to play? Isn't that the gamble you want to bet on? Isn't that why you're here? To find out for yourself in your own experience if love is enough. If non-aggression can find a way. No matter what. And it's not just that, oh, okay, I choose love, I choose non-aggression. And then it should all kind of, it's demanding to stay with that and know you have no clue how to face that dinosaur or whatever. And to stay. And then some little idea pops up or something pops up. Wow, maybe that. Maybe that. And then, whoa, it does. It worked. And it's partly so demanding because we keep limiting our willingness. We're so willing, but then we're like, okay, I'll practice for calmness, and then calmness, there's a bit more calmness. And we just think, okay, it's gonna just keep getting more calm. And then when calmness naturally bears fruit as being a mess, emotionally, or mentally, or physically, or whatever, some kind of a mess. Then we realize that we'd narrowed down out of our utter willingness to kind of gamble on life and love. And we'd gotten into kind of like hoping we could get a good deal out of it. A small good deal. Which I think you don't want. I think you want the big deal. But naturally, we'll keep finding we've narrowed down again. And naturally, life will show us that we have. When we see that we had expected to be utterly calm forever and be recognized for it by myself and the others. Is there anything anyone wants to say or ask or share before we end?
Will I see it, I guess, as a result that it ended up well?
Yeah.
From inside, although outside can be a full mess.
Inside too can be a full mess.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good question, and it's very hard. Did you want to say more in the question?
It's this question started with an easy, simple example, as I asked maybe today already. I don't know if it's connected with your good question. When I walk outside for a walking meditation, I watch myself somehow really enjoying, and maybe it's the mind watching, oh wow, how crazy, but very funny, I just let it happen. As also when I eat food, it's very funny what all happens, all coming out, not bothering at all, but somehow obeying the rules. But there is much freedom to move. So I wondered, in my walking meditation, should I just walk? Or does the body also feel to move anywhere and walk? And some very interesting walking is coming out, and it feels very free, and then it stands. And then it looks, and then to fall in this, maybe just to be fully in the moment of, okay, it's like this, it just moves like that suddenly and intuitive and craziness. Is that also this moment to lose the job, to lose a flat, to lose my flight ticket? Get rid of all the plans and be in this craziness, which is maybe just not far away from insanity, where people put you into somewhere and people will get very worried, and then maybe, yeah, it's a could be like that, maybe.
So I think the question is a good question, and within the question, is it right or wrong, is already the insanity. And so feeling what comes before checking, is it right or wrong? What are you really trying to find out? And then in terms of the walking meditation, instead of like, at, let's say, an extreme of as if you have to choose one or the other, and one is the right way and one is less than, I would say to fully experiment with both. So right now, one maybe sounds like it feels more free, but we don't know. We don't know. There are so many layers of conditioning. So there could be some conditioning around a fear of looking crazy, a fear of going crazy, etc. That's attracted to that line, for example. There could be so many other things. So I would suggest fully experiment with just walk, and fully experiment with whatever you want to call that, exploration of movement, of letting it happen. And to kind of stop in your tracks when you hear yourself trying to feel what, is it right or wrong? Which one is the right one? There's something in the question that I would say would ask you to feel in your body what's happening. What's unwholesome in already looking to say one is right and one is wrong? And then further goes so far to say lose the flight, lose the... That's too far. We don't need to go that far. And the willingness to is good.
The willingness to?
The willingness to is good.
In that decision, the one who is trying to decide, in one hand, there is no decision when it's just happening. So if there is something trying to decide, I can trust in shut up and just go.
I don't think it's quite so, I will say, simplistic. I don't think there's going to be the one way to manage.
If I see on the way, it somehow feels for me like getting away from all this programming, trying to decide and control, then really trying to live this.
Yeah.
When I find something wants to control or to decide, is that always the mind trying to control?
Right.
Or is it from inside also some questions trying to decide?
So what I'm saying is that when there's the word always, something wants to know about always. That is where this, there's some sickness, a human sickness, I mean, to control. I want to know what's going to be always or never. And just experiment. And then slowly that total willingness starts to link with a growing honesty. We have to grow honesty. We weren't, our culture didn't do so good about honesty for us.
Which also needs to learn to decide.
Mm-hmm. Well, the word, I agree, the word decide is a whole subject, but it, to live, yeah.
To find its way.
To find a way to live, yeah. Not to find a way that then we live, not a new program. That's not really living, but I find a way to live. So basically, there's somewhere sneaking in, like trying to find what can I replace all that, now all that programming I'm marking as bad.
Hmm.
And so, but I want to sneak in with a new program that's always going to work, which would be oh so convenient for me. Then I don't have to actually just be in awe all the time. And be, wow, look how that came just before that, whoa, mass extinction, and then flourishing, and letting the vastness of life happen. So just, it can be sometimes cute how the mind keeps sneaking in with a new agenda, and sometimes it's more like, all right, bus. And it's so, so many ways, because it's going to keep happening. And the honesty is to be able to feel the sneakiness and the programming-ness. Just feel the texture of it and not food.
That is the one question I had. When it feels a little bit of tensity, a little bit of uncomfortability, this is always. Always. Then this sneakiness, for me, it's the experience also, these last month, years,
yeah.
All the time, and it's something uncomfortable.
Yeah.
All the time when I feel very right, it's a release feeling of nervous system somehow, it's an extension feeling. It seems always.
So just let honesty and always have some conversations and experiment. And
mm-hmm.
Also just really notice perfectionism is a big one for our culture.
There are some tight, true moments which are not this release feeling.
There can be a release feeling. And great, and there can be tension, and we're still in touch with something that's deep. So it's not that we can measure depth by lack of tension or quality of release. The release helps us dip into something that's beyond biology. And then we accommodate tension without getting more tense about it. We accommodate inconvenience, we accommodate, there's room for it. And even we find ways of meeting it fruitfully. So just it really how easily we get again to a totalitarian state. No tension allowed. Which, as always, is the hypocrisy, because it is fully tension to say there's nothing, something's not allowed. Really? It's not allowed? Are you sure? Seems to be built in.
a comment? I don't know what time it is, but
we've really gone way over.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, it's okay. Sorry.
We can begin with it tomorrow, if you like, if it's still current for you.
Okay.
So there's, instead of half an hour for time before dinner, there's 22 minutes. And feel free to go outside for that, stay inside for that. I think there's a dinner bell, is that right? Or not? Yeah, so you'll hear the bell for dinner. If you stay here, you'll hear the bell in the hall also. Thank you so much for your quality of presence and practice and